Hi, everyone. I'm Anita Lustria, and for many years I did live radio. Then I transitioned to the podcast world where I feel I found my home. I love talking about spiritual formation, justice issues, and spiritual practices. Throw in the Enneagram, movies, and current events from time to time, and that's what you get on the podcast. I'm glad you've come along for the ride. Welcome to Faith Conversations. Welcome to Faith Conversations, everyone. I'm so glad that you've joined me today. Got some good stuff in store, not the least of which is a poem from a regular Faith Conversations listener, which I think falls right in line with the type of guest, the kind of guest that we have today, a very thoughtful guest who has written on a topic that I personally love. And we're going to talk about her book, The Powerful Purpose of Introverts. Holly Girth is here with us, and I'm so grateful for that. And before we get going, I'm going to read a poem that Marge sent in. Marge emails regularly and is, hey, all Faith Conversations listeners are thoughtful, right? But she's written this poem, and it just really grabbed me. It's called Cocoon. And maybe we'll talk just briefly to Holly about it. So let me read this. Cocoon. I entered a cocoon on March 14, 2020. Will I emerge as a butterfly? Will I see the smile of a stranger and rejoice? Will I share a handshake and wonder at the beauty of human connection? Will I hug my brother and hold him tight and let our love linger in that moment of closeness? Will I enter my church building filled with some I know, some I don't know, and savor the comfort of community? Will I stand in a crowded line and, remembering the months of isolation, be happy? I hope I will. I hope I will be beautiful. I hope I will fly. Thank you, Marge. And if you didn't grasp that, that's written after a year of COVID living. And so on the heels of that lovely poem, I want to introduce our guest today, Holly Girth, who's a Wall Street Journal best-selling author. She's a life coach and licensed counselor. And I so appreciate her work. Some of you may have read Strong, Brave, Loved, or Fierce-Hearted. And today, as I mentioned already, we're going to be talking more about the powerful purpose of introverts, why the world needs you to be you. Holly, welcome to Faith Conversations.
Thank you so much for having me.
How did you like that poem?
That was beautiful.
Wasn't
that? I love the perspective of seeing the season as an opportunity for transformation.
Me too. I just felt like that was such a powerful lens through which to look at this COVID year. And year is true. We're right at just about at the year-long mark of when everything was shut down and we first became acquainted with this dread virus, and now we have some hope happening with the vaccine and all of that. But yeah, what a good lens to look
yes,
through.
Absolutely.
And I'm just thinking, and I think that's probably why I reached out and thought this would be a good time to talk with you. We've been through the ringer, but we've been through a year that has put many of us in isolation. Now, that's not what we're talking about when we talk about introverts, but I've got to believe, maybe, I'd like your perspective, was this COVID year easier on introverts or extroverts?
That's a great question, and I've seen a lot of different opinions on it. I think when it first began, I did get some messages from introverts that were kind of the equivalent of free at last, you know, I feel, you know, freer than I ever had before. And then I think as the months have gone on, we all miss meaningful connection. And that might like look different, like some of my introverts are saying, I want to have coffee with one person, where the extroverts are like, I'm ready for a dinner party. So how we most want to re-engage, and even some of the activities we may leave behind when we do are probably different for introverts or extroverts. But I think at this point, we are all just ready to be done.
People on the podcast have heard me share this haiku before that I wrote early on in the pandemic. I wrote, "For an introvert, shelter in place is a treat until it isn't."
Yes, exactly.
And that says perfectly put. Just what you were saying. You know, at the beginning, some of us thought, woohoo, we can be the introvert and we can't be made to be an extrovert.
Yeah.
But yes, for all of us, there came a point where it's like enough already. We want to reengage. We're tired of this Zoom world that we're all a part of.
Yeah.
You know, you just said something that I thought is really interesting. We've also had the chance to think about when we do re-enter, and of course, you know, depending on where you live, the state you live, and the kinds of restrictions, some of life has returned to some semblance of normal, even though we're wearing masks and still doing some physical distancing from others. I think we are thinking about what do we want to re-engage in and what don't we? What does that conversation look like inside your own head, or maybe you and your husband talking about it?
Yeah, when I've talked with other people about this, we've talked about it as if we are picking things up again. And so we've gotten to lay down, for better or worse, many things in our lives in the last year. And I think that's an opportunity when we pick something up again to say, does this feel heavy? Is this something that I want to leave behind? Because we have an opportunity to do that in a way we wouldn't normally. And so I think it's worth just being intentional as we add things back into our lives to notice, what does this do to my mind and my heart and my spirit? Does it bring life in this season? Or do I want to take this opportunity to say, that was then, this is now. It's okay if I go forward without some things that were in my life.
You know, I kind of picture it. My grandmother was a great baker, and I just picture her using the flour sifter back in the day when people used to sift flour still. And I just picture putting all those things in the sifter and seeing what actually can fall through those smaller openings to see what it is that we do move forward with. It takes some thought and some activity. I guess I use the sifter because it does. It takes some action on our part to think it through and decide what we're going to let fall down through the sifter to remain a part of our lives, and what we're going to choose to disengage from, right?
Yes. Yeah. I think deciding what's been an obligation that we've told ourselves we should fulfill, and all of us have some we have to fulfill,
right?
You know, that's part of being human. But are there some things that we've said I should, or I have to, or I must, then maybe we realize are optional after all. And it's okay to realize that and to let the people who love those things do them, and for us to pursue what is more life-giving.
I'm wondering too about the church setting. And I'm sure, you know, pastoral teams, the world over, literally, I'm sure are thinking and rethinking, and there are books that are coming out about, you know, what do we continue doing? What do we let go of? What do we need to do that we haven't done in the past? And, you know, I used to hear the term a lot, you know, I can't wait to get back to normal. Well, when something goes on for this long, a whole year, and then some, really, before life is back to some semblance of normal, I guess, you know, what do we want normal to look like? The normal of a year ago might not be something that we want. And so I think churches, I don't know what your church looks like, or pastors you've been in touch with, but I'm sure this has been on their minds, right?
Yes, definitely. And I actually got to go to church for the first time in person in a year a couple weeks ago.
Wow.
And it was a strange experience. But it was interesting too as an introvert, because I go to a very large church. I wrote in the book about how I always bring earplugs and a journal and some tea. And I've come up with all these strategies because when I walk in, it's a church that's very exuberant in their worship. And, you know, nothing wrong with that. It's just I need to adapt because being an introvert is really about how our brains and nervous systems are wired and how external stimulation affects us. So in a place where there would have been thousands of people, I walked in 2 weeks ago and there are maybe 100.
Wow.
And it was so much quieter. Yeah. And of course, I want everyone to be able to go to church. But there was something in me as an introvert that felt more comfortable in that space.
Yeah.
And more able to focus on God in a way that was meaningful to me. Mm. And the pastors even incorporated a Selah, which is a pause for silence. And we all just sat there and it was silent. Mm. And that was beautiful to me. It's a gift to sing together. It's also a gift to be silent together. And so I think it's healthy in a lot of ways for even us as churches to be saying, what does it look like going forward to be the body of Christ?
And I think, you know, something that you just said, that really resonated with your introvert soul, maybe we change things up a little bit so that we meet the needs of the entire body of Christ. We don't do it the same week in and week out, and it just has a different look on different weeks. And I think that's really important to pay attention to. I love that a lot.
And I think introverts have some real gifts that the church needs. For many years, like solitude and silence were a regular part of faith life. Like when you go to Europe and walk into cathedrals, like St. Paul's Cathedral, I got to do that. And immediately people lower their voices,
yes,
they slow their paces, they become more reflective. And I thought, everyone's acting more introverted in here. How interesting. And it used to be that church was a refuge from the chaos and the noise of the world. And so I think that introverts can bring some of that back into what we do, and not at all to criticize the other parts. I think we need the boldness, we need the enthusiasm. But like you said, we need all of it. We need the complete body of Christ, right, to bring all their gifts. And so I really feel like for such a time as this, yeah, introverts have a lot to contribute.
I love that. I think you're exactly right. Well, you started mentioning a little bit about the definition of an introvert, and I want to get back to that. But I want to ask you first why you did decide to write this book. I mean, was it just because, you know, the world is what the world is and you're an introvert yourself making your way in this world? Or had you had so many conversations with others? What led you to the writing of this particular book?
Yeah, well, I've always been fascinated with how we're wired. And so when I told my mom I was writing this book, she said, of course you are. In fourth grade, you read Kevin Lehman's birth order book.
I love it.
Came up with an assessment for all your friends and did it as a science project. I was like, I did. And she's like, you were nine.
Oh, that's hysterical. That's great.
So I first heard the word introvert in college at a campus ministry meeting where they had a guest speaker about personality. And it was a huge light bulb moment for me. So I started learning about it then. And then later on, when Susan Cain's book Quiet really made the conversation about introversion more mainstream, I went even deeper. But I went through a season of burnout about 6 years ago where I told myself I have to be an extrovert. Like once I started publishing and getting speaking invitations, I just said, this is the job. And because I didn't understand enough about who I was or feel confident that God had designed me for his purpose in my life, that I didn't have to be like anyone else, I pushed myself into burnout. And a lot of my healing was coming to understand the strengths and gifts and intentional design of being an introvert. And so once I started knowing that, I wanted all my fellow introverts and the extroverts who love leaders share life with them to know that too.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I am an introvert, probably didn't know that earlier on in my life. I was reading something in your book, not that we change. We don't, you know, people will ask, does an introvert become an extrovert? Or can an introvert become an extrovert, vice versa? But I have noticed a shift in myself to even more introversion the older I've gotten, or that I need a lot more time alone to recharge. And maybe I just didn't have the time for that earlier in my life. I'm not sure how that works, but let's not go too far ahead. Let's go back. And what really is the definition what's an introvert? Let me just start there.
Well, I love Susan Cain's definition, which is introverts have a preference for minimally stimulating environments. And so it's not about small talk. It's not about socializing. It's really about how we process the world around us. And so I think that's a big aha, that it really is our brains and our nervous system, and that we need both in the world, but that most of the stereotypes we hear about what it means to be an introvert just aren't accurate.
And that was a little bit eye-opening to me as I read this in your book, actually, because, and it made a whole lot of sense. So much of it made sense to me because my husband, I have always defined it as an introvert needs alone time and space to recharge. Well, and that might be a piece, I don't know, but that's been more of my total definition. But when I read what you just said to us, this external stimulus piece, it made so much sense. My husband goes into a room and on goes the TV, or he says something to the, you know, I won't say the name, to the little speaker in the corner, because I don't want that speaker to turn on while I'm trying to record with you, but you know what I mean. He'll say the name and on will pop the radio, and he might leave the room and leave those things going, but not even realize it. It doesn't matter to him. And as soon as he's gone, I turn it all off. I just need silence. Yeah. So speak to that. It is that external stimulus.
It is. And there is an interesting research study where they put extroverts and introverts in a room, each separately, and said, turn the volume to what's most comfortable to you. And extroverts turn it up 30% higher.
I know that to be true.
Yeah. And the brain part of that behind it is extroverts feel their best through a neurotransmitter called dopamine, which acts kind of like caffeine. It revs us up, prepares us for action. It's released when we have anything coming at us from the outside. But introverts have a level of dopamine that already feels pretty good. It's like we've had our morning cup of coffee. So we don't need a lot more coming at us necessarily. And we feel our best through a different neurotransmitter, acetylcholine, which I say works more like herbal tea. It's released when we do things like have a meaningful conversation, focus deeply on a project we're passionate about, take that time for reflection. And so that the illustration you gave of your husband and you is a perfect example of that. He's got the TV and stuff going because that's getting the dopamine flowing. And then you're turning it off because you need some of that acetylcholine going. So that can lead to negotiations.
Totally does. And it also leads to understanding. I know if I'm going to hop in his car, that I immediately need to turn the radio way down and off. But I mean, I know, you know, I used to get in and turn his car on, and then I would like leap in sheer horror at the volume that the radio was on.
Yes.
and I would, you know, turn it down and then off. And in my car, most often, unless I'm listening to like an audio book or something, most often I drive in silence. Just want silence, because wherever I'm going, there's going to be stimulus there.
Yeah.
External stimulus. So that's so interesting. Well, but talk about the piece that I thought was the definition about needing quiet and alone space to recharge our batteries. Is that also a part of things for an introvert, needed things?
Yes, because what you're really saying is I need time in less stimulating environments. That's really what it's about. Okay. I need time when there's not so much going on around me. And that's because introvert nervous systems, if you think of our nervous systems as nets with holes that catch things, introverts would have smaller holes. In other words, we catch more, which can make us observant, perspective, you know, perceptive, and all those strengths we bring. But it also means we hit our done point faster. And so that's why at the end of a party, your extrovert husband might be like, where are we going next? And you're like, home in my bed with the covers over my head until I feel better. And you have time to process and kind of empty your net, and then you're ready for more. But that's what's going on. So it still goes back to that internal, external stimulation dynamic. And people just happen to be the most stimulating thing in our external environment. So that's why it looks like, oh, this is about people. but it's really back to that brain and nervous system wiring.
So what about, this is another perception of mine, that, and it's an observation, I guess, about my own life. I would rather meet one friend and have a one-on-one lengthy conversation over coffee or tea, than walk into a room with, you know, 5 to 10 people. I would rather have that one-on-one conversation. Is that fairly typical for introverts as well?
Yes, it is, because of the wiring differences we've been talking about. Acetylcholine being released when we're able to fully focus. Introverts are at our best when we are able to fully focus on one person, one project, that inward reflection that we do. And so that is a real sweet spot for us, where extroverts do great at work in the room, you know, and being able to take in all of that stimulus in a way that then they use in productive ways. But it's okay as introverts for us to say, my sweet spot is this deep conversation with this one person. And it's okay if that looks different than how other people are doing it. When I go to a conference, I always try to find a designated extrovert.
<That's great. laughs>
And I'm like, you help me work the room. If someone starts crying and wants to talk for 2 hours, I'll take it. And they're like, okay, good. And then we're both happy.
That is so interesting. How did you, you know, you mentioned that you went through a period of burnout about 6 years ago or so. How did you come back from that, heal, and move back to maybe a better place of equilibrium for you?
Yeah, well, there are several components. Counseling, I love counseling, definitely believe it. Tell my friends and close loved ones, hey, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
But doing a lot of research and learning, that's a way that as an introvert, when I have aha moments that transform my perspective, that can be helpful. And then I think, honestly, a lot of it was not being able to do the things I thought I had to do to gain love and approval. You know,
yes.
Because I just been like, I got to hustle, you know, the world will end if I don't, I won't be loved anymore if I don't. And then I got to a place where that just wasn't possible. And I found out it wasn't true, which was a gift. But part of it was forced learning.
Can I, I'm an Enneagram trainer. Can I ask what your Enneagram type is?
A one.
Okay. All right.
One wing nine. Yeah.
All right. I was curious about that. A couple of the words that you used made me wonder. Yeah, it's interesting. The world does not fall apart, does it? In fact, the world is enhanced when we move forward into the fullness of who God created us to be.
Yeah. What is that quote that says, the glory of God is man fully alive?
Yeah.
And that's what I came to see, that the more I leaned into the way I was designed, yeah, the more he was able to use me in the way he intended. And that there were a lot of other people that were great at doing the things that weighed me down, like full weekend retreats. They would exhaust me.
Yeah.
But I had extroverts who were like, please go lock me, you know, in a camp with 200 strangers. Like, I love that. And so I thought, I just need to send people to them. And so I did. And then sometimes they would send me an opportunity that they said, this is a great fit for you. It's not as good of a fit for me. And yeah, so I think we tend to believe it's all on us. And it's such a relief to say I'm part of the body,
yes,
of Christ.
Yes.
And so sometimes I'm the one to say the yes, but sometimes I'm just the bridge to connect whoever to someone who is a great fit for that opportunity. And so that was a big relief too. Mm.
One of the things that you talk about in the book, and this was interesting to me, you say that what we see as struggles can actually be our biggest strengths. Talk a little bit about that, because usually when we see things as struggles, we, you know, try and distance ourselves from them. How is it that that can be a real strength?
Yeah, that was a perspective shift that really contributed to my healing too. So I realized in my life and in being a counselor especially, that there are often things that we want to get rid of about ourselves, right? And so I began to see the core parts of who we are, like that nervous system I described that introverts have. is being at the center of a continuum. And on the left side of that continuum, it would be labeled struggle. And that's where things like anxiety can show up for me. And on the right side of that continuum, it would be labeled strength. And that's where things like empathy, perceptiveness would show up. But they're all on the same continuum. Mm. And so instead of saying, God wants to transform me through elimination, he wants to transform me by helping me take steps toward the strength side of who I am and away from the struggle side. And so that was really freeing to realize. And I see that in other people too, that where there's a struggle in our lives, if we look really hard, it's usually the flip side of a strength. And that healing comes when we know that and embrace it and let go of shame and guilt, and instead to say, how do I start moving to the other end of this continuum?
Yeah. Emphasis on letting go of shame and guilt.
Yes.
I heard that loud and clear. I love that. You talk about 9 specific strengths in the book, strengths of introverts, I mean, specifically. And one of them, in fact, I think it's the first one that you talk about, is strategic solitude. And let's talk, you know, it's interesting. I'm a spiritual director, and so solitude is a spiritual practice. And I'll talk with clients about silence and solitude, and those are 2 different things, but they can join in the same space, certainly, silence and solitude. But talk about solitude and what strategic solitude looks like. And it's not just being alone. A lot of people can take it and go, that just means, oh good, my spouse is going out, I'm going to be alone in the house, I'm going to have solitude. That's not really what you're talking about.
Yes. In our culture, we tend to confuse isolation and solitude. So isolation is really living disconnected from God, others, and our true selves. It's what, when God says it's not good for man to be alone in Genesis, that's what the original word means, that disconnectedness. And we can experience that in a crowd. Some of my most isolating moments have actually happened in a room full of people where I just felt like, I don't feel known. I don't feel like I belong. And so, like you said, it's not about physical space. And so I used to feel guilty for needing solitude because I confused it with isolation. But solitude is time taken apart for a specific purpose. So renewal, prayer, creative work, all of these things that then we go back to our relationships and our workplaces, our communities, our families, with actually more to give. And there's been a lot of leadership studies that have shown that for introverts and extroverts, solitude is one of the most essential things that contribute to success. And we may need a different amount of time, whether we're an introvert or extrovert, but I think we all need those moments. Mm. I found that introverts, yes, we sometimes avoid people, but extroverts sometimes use people to avoid themselves.
Ooh,
and so we need both. Yeah. Introverts need that meaningful connection. Extroverts need solitude sometimes.
Let's talk about the meaningful connection piece for a moment. I have people in my life that, let me tell a different story, or tell this a different way. So my husband and I have lived in Sarasota, Florida for over 4 years now. And when we first moved, you know, you desire to make new connections and make new friends. You don't just desire it, you need that. For me as an introvert, I felt like it took so much longer because I needed to find people. I was looking for a specific kind of person that I could go deep with, that I had a connection around spiritual formation. And I just seemed like there were so many more things on my list that I was looking for in new relationships. And I didn't want to waste time with acquaintances, where I've had friends who've moved to a different area or people, I won't say friends, I'll say people that I've known who've moved to a new area, and they'll say, it took no time and I had 20 friends. And in my head, I'm going, those are not really friends, they're acquaintances. And there's that sense that, I mean, introverts, is it true? Do we have more meaningful connections? And what does that look like for an extrovert? And do they need some of those same kind of connections? Or is it just we're different and that's okay?
Yeah, I think we all long for deep connection. I did a survey with my readers and I asked them, are you an introvert or extrovert? What's your biggest challenge as an introvert or extrovert? And I got thousands of responses. So what surprised me most was the extrovert said their biggest challenge was loneliness.
Ooh.
And I would have thought it would be the opposite, right?
Wow.
Because of the stereotypes in our culture.
Wow.
So that tells me that even if extroverts have a lot of people in their lives, they still long for that meaningful connection. And it may not come quite as naturally to them. And that, again, is where I think introverts can serve those around us by saying, okay, instead of trying to be more like everyone around me, pushing myself to be busy all the time, have quantity of relationship, it's okay for me to focus on quality. Mm. It's okay for me to say, I'm going to put in the time and the effort and energy to do what you did, to find those few people that I can really go deep with. And some of those people may be extroverts who are relieved to say, you know what, my life is fun. I'm so glad I have 50 people I could have over for a party in my backyard at any given moment. But I'm so glad I also have this introvert in my life that is like a refuge for me when I need it, mm-hmm. who knows how to listen well, mm-hmm. who makes me think about things I might not otherwise, who adds things to my life, just like I'm grateful for the things extroverts add to my life. But we miss out on giving those gifts to people when we say, I'm not allowed to be this way. Instead, we can see it as a service, especially in our busy, overwhelming culture where we are all craving true connection.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That makes a whole lot of sense. My husband and I had this conversation at one point in time. He would love to have these gatherings of, you know, 25 people. And I finally realized that I would be so anxious prior to these gatherings. And I finally zeroed in on a number that felt okay to me, that he was okay with as well. It was more than one. I said 10 max, and that includes you and me. That's what I told him. And I said, I can do that, which is 8 other people, and I can do that, but no more. And that was enough that he was happy with that. And I could handle that too, because within the context of those other 8 people, there were usually, you know, 2 or 3 or more introverts that I could connect well with, and then my husband could carry the rest of the rest of the group, whatever way he wanted.
Strategy.
Yeah, that was a big conversation. I realized, wow, we've done these large events multiple times, and I seem to get more anxious at the next, you know, like with each one that we do, and something's got to change. And so we had a great conversation.
Yeah,
it took me a while to figure out it was me, you know, that I needed to have the conversation.
Yeah. But I love how you recognize that and gave yourself permission to feel that way. Because a lot of times we just say, I shouldn't feel this way.
Right.
Something's wrong with me.
Right.
I'm supposed to love being with people all the time, as many people as I can, because that's kind of what culture says. But you said something's wrong, but you didn't say something's wrong with me.
Yeah.
You said something's off with this. Let's look at the situation and see how it can be changed, instead of internalizing and saying, I have to change. And I think that's the key, because we don't want to lock ourselves in closets all the time. You know, that's not who we are as introverts either.
Right.
But we also don't want to dismiss those warning signs that our minds and hearts and bodies give us. And so I love how you handle that thing. Something's off, I'm going to pay attention, and then something needs to change. But that doesn't mean that something is me.
Yeah,
it's
right.
It's probably the specifics of the situation that we can negotiate.
I have a couple of introverts in my life, a couple of friends who, and even though I'm an introvert, I'm a very verbal introvert. I did talk radio for years, and I learned how to think on my feet and not have to have a pause before talking. I had to learn that. But I've got a couple of introvert friends who talk less than I do. And when they speak, I lean in. I mean, I want to hear what they're going to say. And I feel like they have this amazing influence because they use less words than I do. And I feel like when they choose to use words, they have really valuable things to say. And you talk about a strength of introverts, one of the strengths of being genuine influencers. And I would love for you to talk more about that. I don't know if it has anything to do with what I just said, but I see that. I see how introverts can have this influence. But talk a little bit more about what you mean by that.
Yeah. Well, really quickly, the brain science behind what's going on there is extroverts use a shorter, faster brain pathway for processing. And so that's why they're great at that quick back and forth conversation. Introverts use a longer, more complex brain pathway that takes into account the past, present, and future. So that's why we often need time, that pause before we respond. But like your friends that you described, when we do speak, we often add things like insight and perspective and depth to the conversations we're in. And so that's what's going on there. But I do think, like you said, it can lead to influence, because influence has really shifted in our culture. It used to be about power and position, like the CEO or the newscaster. And now, because of social media, things like that, it no longer looks like a pyramid. It's been flattened.
Yes.
And influencers are at the hub of a network of meaningful relationships. And so having those few deep relationships, like you described, actually makes you an influencer. And I love this because it's Jesus style influence.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Isn't that true?
He got those 12 men around him. And even though he engaged with crowds, he's the one who does all of this perfectly balanced and well. But he did say, I'm going to deeply invest in a smaller group of people and let that impact ripple out. Mm-hmm. So I think that tells us as introverts that we can have a different kind of influence. And then it's really fun to see an introvert and extrovert pair up, because then you kind of get the best of all worlds.
That's interesting.
And yeah, Jennifer Konweiler, an author, calls those pairings genius opposites.
Genius opposites.
When there's true transformative change in our culture or history, it's that an extrovert and introvert have paired up and changed the world. So I love that too.
That's really interesting. It also makes you kind of sit back after hearing that and start thinking about couples that you know in your world, or pairings, you know, that are really effective, I should say. That's really fun to think about that. I love it. So I'm curious one thing you said just a second ago, brain science. So I did want to step back to that and say, you've used a lot of brain science here in the book. And I introduced you as, you know, part of your bio when I introduced you at the front end of the broadcast as being not just an author, which you are, because we're talking about The Powerful Purpose of Introverts, your most recent book, but the fact that you're a life coach and licensed counselor. So I think it's really interesting that that comes into play in this conversation, but you went deeper than just that knowledge that you've accrued over time and study to go deeper with brain science. What got you moving in that direction? Or was that just the next logical step if you were to learn more about introverts?
Yeah, I love brain science because it gives me the same feeling I have standing at the edge of the Grand Canyon. Ooh. Or being on the beach, like that awe and wonder at God's work.
Okay.
And I think the principle of the Word made flesh is about Jesus, but it's also about us. But like the image of God is wired into us, not just spiritually, but physically. Like we hear that verse, be renewed by the transforming of your mind. Well, that is spiritually true, but also when we learn new thought patterns, we literally make new neural pathways in our brains physically. Like that just gave me chills when I said it.
Wow.
And so I love that. It makes me feel worshipful to say God is in the tiniest cells of who we are, and our brains are a masterpiece.
And that those even negative neural pathways can be rewritten.
Yes.
When we shift and change. That's true too.
Yes,
right?
It's true. If you start trying to think differently, you'll get resistance at first, because it is like, I had a little dog who ran the same path in my yard over and over and over, you know, and wore down.
Yes.
So if she had picked a different route, it would take some time for the grass to grow over that old one and for the new one to be established. And that's what's going on with us in the process of changing our thinking. So at first we experience resistance, confusion, and frustration. All that means is we are going through that physical transformation. It takes about 3 months for that process to be complete. And so again, letting go of shame and guilt if we don't immediately feel what we have decided is real, that it is a process that's not only spiritually transformative, but actually happening in our brain.
Huh. That's great. I love that. So interesting. All right. I'm watching our time here. And before we wrap up, what is that thing, that one thing about introverts that we have not gotten to or talked about yet that you're like, I've got to say this before we wrap things up?
Yeah. I love the story of the prophet Elijah when he wants to see God's glory, and God says, go up on the mountain. And there's an earthquake that's so strong, it shakes the rocks loose. And then there's a wind that's mighty. And then there's a fire. And it says, God was not in any of those. And then there's the sound of a gentle whisper. And that speaks to me as an introvert, that maybe we as introverts are called to be living echoes of the gentle whisper of God in our generation. And again, I think extroverts express God's character and heart in some very different ways. But I just want my introvert brothers and sisters to hear that who they are is powerful and needed more than ever before, that we are who we are, introvert and extrovert, for such a time as this.
And especially for such a time as this, as we're moving through this really difficult COVID year, I think everything that you talk about in The Powerful Purpose of Introverts, it is magnified that much more because of what we've been going through over the course of this past year.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you wrote this. I think it's fascinating, number one. And of course, I'm a lover of this because I am an introvert, but I think it's just important. I think we're called to know ourselves more deeply. Knowing self and knowing God are inextricably linked. And reading your book can be a part of that, The Powerful Purpose of Introverts, Why the World Needs You to Be You. Holly Girth, I'm glad you decided to be you and write this. Thanks so much. It's just great to have you.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks so much for having me.
And to everyone else, as always, I say, keep the conversation going.